welcome to Dispel Magic, the podcast where we overthink how the magic of D&D might shape your campaign in surprising and unexpected ways. I'm Benjamin, game designer and writer.
And my name's Dane. I'm a dungeon master, podcaster, and voice actor. Benjamin, I feel like we haven't seen each other for a while.
Jesus, where did that come from? Dane's voice out of nowhere. Where are you?
I've been invisible for 6 months. We're back with a new episode of Dispel Magic. It's the first episode of the new season. We've been invisible this whole time.
6 months is a long time to be invisible, Dane. I think you should probably just drop to concentration so we can have this conversation.
All my spell slots have been used up for this. Oh, boy. We're doing invisibility this week. We're starting off strong. Classic D&D spell, invisibility.
Yep, a lot of shenanigans.
It's the rogue's dream, right? You get to do all the things a rogue wants to do. Sneak around, get advantage on your attacks for that sweet, sweet sneak attack. Ooh.
You have really just summarized completely why spells are so bad in D&D, or what the kind of negative consequence of it is because anything anybody else wants to do, a wizard can do better. I want to be a rogue. I want to sneak around and break in places I'm not supposed to be. Okay, well, that's a first level spell and a second level spell for a wizard. And then they also get to do a ton of other stuff.
Visibility, I feel like, should be used more in games, but I don't see it used in a lot of my games.
I don't think I've noticed it not getting used. I don't think you run a lot of combat heavy games either, but my games are very much not combat heavy at all. It's usually like fighting every three sessions, maybe at most. And even then, I'm kind of like forcing a fight to happen just because I feel like there should be one. And so in a low combat game, I think the spell makes more sense because there's a lot more like sneaking into a place, sneaking out of a place, avoiding people, whatever else. Like when it's like investigation and socializing a lot in a game, I think the spell might be more useful.
Right. Well, let's run down the spell description. Invisibility is a second level illusion spell available to bards, sorcerers, warlocks, and wizards. It takes one action to cast, has a range of touch, and a duration of concentration up to an hour. The spell text says, a creature you touch becomes invisible until the spell ends. Anything the target is wearing or carrying is invisible as long as it is on the target's person. The spell ends for a target that attacks or casts a spell. When you cast this spell using a spell slot of third level or higher, you can target one additional creature for each slot level above second. Short and sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not to, it doesn't have all the kind of odd angles that we sometimes like to play with on the show. It's just you're invisible for a while. The expected uses, I think, are pretty self-evident because there's no like weird angle we're coming at it from. It's just whatever you can kind of imagine being invisible would be useful for, that's what it would be good for. So things like sneaking around dungeons or other dangerous places without getting caught, doing a wee bit of spying.
Oh, just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit of spying. And then there's some combat utility, although not much, because this spell ends immediately if you attack or cast a spell. So,
well, I think that's why I don't see it in games in combat very much, because people are like, well, it doesn't really...
Right.
It doesn't really last very long.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an action and a spell slot to essentially just take the help action.
Right.
Instead of,
right.
Yeah, like in a fight. I mean, it could be good, I guess, if you're on a escort mission or something and you're just trying to keep your one person safe and maybe out of the fight, then there could be some utility around that. I guess actually also it doesn't say that you can't take actions. It just says you can't take attacks. So you could go around to take the help action, interact with things in the environment that might, you know, be beneficial for people. So maybe there are some...
Pull the lever, grab the scepter, cut the rope so that the chandelier hits them on the head.
Yeah, I think that goes back to then, like, is that not an attack if you're
cutting a rope?
Trying to drop a chandelier on someone's head. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's like you're cutting a rope. That's not an attack, but then you're dropping a chandelier on someone's head. So,
DM, I'm targeting the rope. Excuse me.
I think you technically make attacks against inanimate. I don't know. Anyway, that's going down the rabbit hole. There is the fourth level spell, Greater Invisibility. That's concentration up to 1 minute. And with that, you can attack and cast spells and stay invisible. So if you are looking for an invisibility spell with more combat utility, you want to be looking for Greater Invisibility.
This spell's got everything. You can fit in all the actions you want. hits roof. Also, anyone can cast this. Bards, sorcerers, warlocks, wizards. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of folks.
It's gonna be around. Pretty prevalent.
Yeah, any major settlement is gonna have a fair number of people who can cast this spell. Which, you know, because it's also only a second level, so that means you only need to be third level to be able to cast it. So yeah, any major settlement between bards, sorcerers, warlocks, wizards that are of third level or higher could have access to this spell. So that's a pretty large pool of people who know it. And since they don't, it's not a self-target spell, it's a touch target spell. So it's a lot of potential people.
I want to bring something up.
Mm-hmm.
So how common do you think spellcasting focuses are? Because if we're looking at components for this, an eyelash encased in gum arabic, that can't be too common, right? Like, unless the demand for this particular component is high, apothecaries or ingredients shops or whatever are just encasing eyelashes in gum arabic. What is gum arabic? Jesus. Do you know what gum arabic is? It's sap. It's like an amber sap. It's wild.
Yeah, so I think probably spellcasting focuses are pretty common because it'd be much easier for a wizard to walk around with a wand than like all of the different material components for all of his spells. But in this case, one thing that would be kind of fun about not having spellcasting focuses is that you could have trees that produce gum arabic, like be very popular for certain kind of, like wizard schools might have them around specifically to extract the sap, put eyelashes in them so that they can be used to cast invisibility. And that's kind of a fun idea.
Yeah, I mean, groves of ingredient farms for various spells, and then you've got the sap section.
So let's dig into some unexpected outcomes. There's a few, despite me saying there aren't any odd angles in the description of the spell, there actually are a few things that I think are interesting, but I want to put them off to later because they're sort of niche.
This show, niche? I don't, that doesn't sound right.
Niche within niche. But I did want to stop to just say that since we're going to be talking a lot more about sorcerers later this season, I did want to note there's a few things they can do when casting this spell that are really interesting. One is through the use of subtle spell, they don't need to make sound or move at all when they're casting it. So that could be really useful in, like, if you're hidden already and you want to stay hidden while you turn invisible. That would be very easy to justify if you use subtle spell, the metamagic effect subtle spell. Another cool thing that sorcerers can do is they have the metamagic option extend spell that makes the duration of the spell double. So in that, for sorcerers, they can actually make this last up to 2 hours.
Much more useful for robbing places.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you have an idea that you're going to rob or do a heist, that extra hour of cushion would probably be ideal.
Get in, get the stuff, and then run away. And if you do get caught, you're still invisible, so they can't chase you.
So a lot of times when we start digging in on the unexpected consequences of these spells, one of the first things we go to is how it would impact big business or government, how it would fundamentally change the way those things operate.
Red tape, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Red tape. With invisibility, I actually think it's unlikely to have a tremendous impact on either of those things.
No, essentially, this is a social spell. Well, not even a social spell, right? It's because bureaucracies can govern social interactions. This feels like a very personal spell. I don't know. how would you use invisibility to get around red tape? Or how would you use red tape to prevent somebody from going invisible? You really can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bigger reason why invisibility would not have much of an impact on those things is that the first place my mind goes is, oh, well, you know, rival merchants would use invisibility to spy on one another so that they knew kind of what business plan somebody was cooking up, who somebody was in business with, what kind of contracts
trade
were being
secrets,
signed, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, trade secrets. Governments would likewise do that to figure out each other's plans and try to cut each other off or
government secrets,
or war and all that, you know, for warfare, all that kind of stuff. But invisibility is a really low level spell. And the same time you can get invisibility, you can get the spell see invisibility. So any any large institution that where secrets are important to the way they operate is going to be invest in having people around who can use see invisibility or who know enough to like throw powder down on the floor so that they can see footsteps of an invisible person walking around as they walk around. So I don't see this as a spell that is really effective against institutions because I think those institutions would have counters to them.
I do love the idea of just sawdust floors everywhere in really high-ranking places because casting see invisibility only has a certain amount of time and you have to upkeep it and you have to designate a person to be the watcher or whatever. So just... just a slaughterhouse feel of sawdust everywhere, but big movers and shakings.
I mean, sawdust or water,
you just know,
if there's just like a very small amount of like water everywhere on the ground, if you've got thick enough boots, it's not going to be a big problem, but you will see the footprints of anybody who's invisible.
You get
around.
A custodian to go around with a wet mop and just constantly wet down the floors.
Probably need a little bit. Well, I guess not. I guess
real
not.
Wet mop. Ooh, the wettest. Yeah. Sloppy mop. They'd be like, bring in the sloppy mop. And then they'd come in and just slosh it around.
I think the less said about that, the better. But so if it doesn't work against institutions, how would the spell change the world?
I mean, it would probably just be for weirdos and gross people who just don't want to be seen and want to get away with stuff, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if it's just perverts.
No, it's just perverts.
Just perverts.
I think it's just perverts who want to be invisible. That's what I think.
Okay. So for sure there would be some number of perverts using invisibility to do their pervert stuff. For sure. But I think, you know, we talked about how high stakes situations or institutions would protect themselves against being the target of an invisible assailant, I guess, or interloper. But like day-to-day people will not have that option. Like if you just live in a city, constantly throwing sawdust all over your house or filling it with water or whatever else might not be convenient and also will be probably irrelevant to you your entire life. So you're, you know, going through all that effort on the off chance that some wizard somewhere one day targets you. So most individual people are not going to be making a huge effort to counter the idea of somebody invisible entering their home. And so I think invisibility actually becomes really closely associated with crime. Like the spell itself probably becomes really closely associated with crime because the most basic, easy use of it is just to break into someone's house. The spell says when you are, everything you wear or carry becomes invisible as well. So you break into a house, everything you're snagging off the shelves and putting in your backpack is now invisible also. So it's trivially easy to rob houses when you've got this spell. And I think that's basically what the spell becomes used for then is all sorts of petty crime.
So it's almost like a social stigma knowing invisibility. If it's so closely related to unsavory things, you know, if you know invisibility as a everyday person, then people are going to instantly associate you with unsavory acts and be like, you know, what are you using that for? Why do you even know that? So a social stigma would probably arise around the knowing of the spell itself.
Social stigma is definitely one like possible outcome or consequence of that association between crime and the spell. I also think another thing might be just that there would be local laws against casting the spell, or you have to be like registered or, oh, here's the red tape. You have to be registered as somebody who knows how to cast the spell. And like, there's some kind of license that you have to be able to cast the spell because they don't want all these random people being able to like sell invisibility services without without any kind of oversight.
So you need to state your purpose. You need to state when and how you use it. And it needs to be checked off that it's above board.
So you, so you get a license from your local magistrate to perform, to cast the spell on people. And then every time somebody casts a spell, they have to fill out a 10-page form that explains why they're doing it, when they're doing it. And you have to keep that on file for a minimum of 2 years after you perform the spell in case anyone needs to investigate that situation.
Yeah, I'm thinking like private investigators would be the ones using it most.
Yeah, so that's true. There is also invisibility does have, and it's weird. I mean, I feel like we've stumbled upon this revelation several times, but it's weird how much anything that's good for criminals is also good for
law enforcement.
Yeah. And so, yes, you would definitely have investigators using invisibility. And so to that extent, maybe the social consequences, there would be some nuance to the social consequences of knowing the spell or the legal consequences to casting the spell, is that there would be then this kind of like, are you using it for crime or are you using it to prevent crime? That kind of thing.
It's like, ew, you know invisibility? And the person's like, well, I'm a security guard, so I have to for my job. I don't want to, but I have to. Certain amount of deniability.
That makes me think that if you were a security guard who knew this spell, it would be an easy way to like take a nap for an hour and be like, oh, I was just patrolling. If you ever did get robbed, you'd just be like, oh, I was patrolling a different part while I was invisible. And
oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. Good, an easy way out. Yeah. Hey, Benjamin, you hear about this new RPG match?
Boy, have I.
Yeah, they're sponsoring the show this week, so you better have. It's the TTRPG matching service that allows you to browse and connect with other tabletop folks who like to play like you do, like even you do.
Huh, so you're saying if I wanted to find someone to play a new game with?
Yeah, RPG match.
If I wanted to meet someone who will actually show up on time?
Yeah, you just go to RPG Match.
What if I want to play with people as excited about world building as I am?
Well, Benjamin, and we all know you're so passionate about world building, I would go to RPG Match. Now, if they want a super political campaign that's mostly social machinations, they should probably go to RPG Match and find you.
Compliment accepted.
When you go to RPG Match, they ask important questions like what your safety tools are, what you think about character death, and different stylistic things so that you're guaranteed to have a good fit before you sit down at the table or your virtual tabletop, the VTT.
RPG Match is also partnering with major publishers, from Chaosium to Free League to Paizo and more, to allow you to unlock special badges.
RPG Match is more than just a matching service, Benjamin. Okay, I can hear it in your voice that you think that they're just a matching service, but they're not.
Guilty.
They're building an online community from the ground up. That's hard to do. They've got tabletop gamers in mind. And are you ready for the best part, Benjamin?
Lay it on me.
It's free.
All of it.
Every part. Just for the listeners, Benjamin just took the palm and he hit it on his forehead like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
Prepare yourself for a truly unique dining experience. A surprising combination of fine dining and breathtaking presentation. We welcome you to La Plaque à Parison, where your culinary desires seem to appear from nowhere. Each course of our elaborate menu will blink into existence right before your eyes, as if by magic. Because it will be. All of our servers are periodically cast with invisibility, so as soon as your dish is prepared, it disappears while being carried to your table. As soon as it arrives and leaves our highly trained and silent staff's hand, voila! Delectable dishes out of thin air. Warning, Please do not walk outside of designated customer lanes or run the risk of being covered in hot and keg soup. Please keep all hands, arms, and objects within the dining area at all times. La Plaque Apparaissante is not responsible for any burns, cuts, or otherwise dismemberment due to any accidents, invisible or otherwise. Please fill out all liability release forms before your reservation times. La Plaque Apparaissante, a sneak attack of flavor on your palate.
So right when we got into unexpected consequences of the spell, one of the things I said is that there are a few oddities to the way the spell is phrased that could lead to some fun outcomes. And one of those things is that unlike pretty much every other spell that automatically works, invisibility does not say that the target has to be willing. So you can turn someone invisible against their will with the spell.
That'd be pretty freaky, where there'd be a moment of existential dread, like in a world where ghosts actually exist. You're like, am I a ghost now? Did I die?
Well, except for everybody would still be able to hear you. So,
well, you say that out loud, like, oh my God, am I dead? And then everyone's like, no, you're just invisible. Calm down.
Right. And everybody could still touch you and you could still touch things. And
there's that moment, Benjamin, of uncertainty, and your stomach drops down and you're just like, oh no, it happened. I'm a ghost now.
Do you think, yeah, I guess there could be someone very gullible or naive who one moment is standing there and then the next moment can't see their own hands. And their very first thought is, I'm dead.
I mean, low wisdom scores are a thing.
Yeah, so fair enough, yeah. I don't think that's likely what happens most of the time. But sure, yeah, so you could trick somebody into thinking they're a ghost by casting invisibility on them. So I'd love to hear from listeners if anybody has an idea about how you might use this to turn somebody who's unwilling invisible, like how that could be helpful. The only situation I could really think of is if you are, and this is pretty dark, if you're kidnapping somebody and you've already got them like bound and like some gagged, then you could turn them invisible to like move them easier or whatever, or just not be seen while you're, yeah. And the reason you have to bind and gag them is because if they were smart enough to attack you, the invisibility spell would end. So you not only like there's a lot of work you have to do to make it useful to turn somebody who doesn't want to be invisible, because obviously if they talk, then who cares if they're invisible? If they can attack you, then they can end the spell themselves if they know to do that. So I thought it was interesting. I don't know
what could be done with it. It's an interesting idea, unwilling invisibility. I just think that in general, it would be kind of addicting to be invisible. There's a sort of a power to it, knowing that people can't see you. And if you're quiet enough, then you can get around. It makes me think of Plato's ring or the One Ring from The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings. And people would get real power trips going invisible and trying to do all sorts of the nefarious things. Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I mean, that could be true. I feel like that's sort of spellcasting in general. Invisibility does in particular allow you to do some morally ambiguous things. But I think a lot of magic does. So I think by the time you're even just a third level spellcaster, you've got a lot of like options that would make
some tempting nefarious things.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That if you were a person inclined to malevolent or even selfish behavior, that you've got a lot of spells at this point already.
This is kind of interesting then, because we're all familiar with the trope of the mad mage, right? The power's gone to your head. and then eventually turning into liches and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So would wizard schools, would magic schools have really heavy morality classes? Like in law, you have to take morality and law classes.
Ethics classes.
Ethics, that's the word. So would these wizards have to be going to class after class about ethics and what is just and what is right?
One thing that's interesting about that idea is that bards, sorcerers, and warlocks, I think, don't really have the same there's not necessarily any institution associated with those three classes. And so it would be interesting if one way in which wizards were different, like culturally, I guess, from bards, sorcerers, and warlocks, is that they did have a lot of philosophy around the use of magic and, you know, ethics classes, that sort of thing. They just were a lot more
aware of how their magic affects things. I think bards would just be using it pretty willy-nilly. And I mean, if we're talking about sorcerers, they would be using it without even knowing it sometimes. It's just their natural raw power coming out of them. But this kind of ethics angle makes me think more of paladins than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think it'd be like the difference between ethics in the context of religion and then ethics in the context of...
Oh, for sure. But when we're thinking ethics in D&D, I think paladins have the whole black and white things are only one way kind of mentality most of the time. Traditionally, anyway.
Yeah, I guess I just mean when you're talking about secular ethics, it's not the same as kind of religious ethics, which tend to be a little bit more black and white or whatever. But now you've got kind of a more nuanced
philosophy.
So another odd thing is that anything which we briefly touched on earlier when talking about robbing places is that anything worn or carried by the invisible target turns invisible as well. Let me clarify that even further, because it doesn't say specifically. What does not say is any object. It says anything worn or carried. So it's not clear to me. It seems likely that they meant objects, but if that is what the game designers meant,
that's not what they said.
And an object does mean something specific in the game. So
words mean things, game designers. Use the right words.
Words mean things. And so one thing I was thinking is maybe you can cast this on a horse, and then if you're riding the horse, you're being carried by the horse, and so you're invisible now as well. That's like kind of the ground level hypothetical situation here. If it's true that anything worn or carried by the target becomes invisible and not just any object.
Can you then attack from horseback and not dispel the spell? Because the horse has the spell on it.
And that's really interesting.
So if you're on the horse attacking things, it's like the I'm not touching you argument. I'm not touching you. The horse isn't attacking.
The horse didn't hit you. The spell can, and the horse didn't hit you.
The thing on the horse attacked you. Totally different.
Yeah, I feel like that in and of itself is all the argument I need that it probably should not let any creatures worn or carried turn invisible, because
suddenly the cavalier class is the optimal invisibility class that instantly makes invisibility greater invisibility.
But so even if we say, which I think we should, no, it. Even though it doesn't say that it has to only be objects, it can't be creatures. Even if we say, but we're going to limit it to objects only.
Sure.
There's still a lot of interesting things that can come from that.
Well, I think of our polymorph episode where we put backpack straps on a warehouse. And does that count as wearing the warehouse, right? Can you now include that as a thing you are wearing and then make that whole thing invisible? Can we?
Yeah, I mean, that's
Benjamin. Can we please?
That's an interesting idea. And I guess I would say if you're not bearing any of the weight of it, it'd be hard to say that you're carrying it, right?
Right. Well, wearing. So, does it say carrying or wearing?
It says both. So there is an argument, I guess, that if wearing you can be considered wearing it.
Yes. Yeah, wearing or. The or is my saving grace here.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe. But it's still the house isn't going to move and everybody can still touch it. So I mean, like, they're going to like walk into the house and like hit the wall or something because they...
It's See, still this there. This castle is my accessory for my outfit. It really makes my whole ensemble come together when I wear this castle. Turn me invisible.
Yeah. So whether or not you can turn an entire house invisible by stapling straps to it and wearing it while somebody casts invisibility on you, the more practical use would be that loading up a pack animal with goods that are illegal or highly valuable, that casting invisibility on the pack animal would be a great way to get it from here to there with lower risk of robbery if you're talking about moving high-value goods, or lower risk of getting caught by law enforcement if you are smuggling something that's illegal or controversial in some way.
A smuggler's dream.
Another thing related, going like sort of that blends this creature and object discussion, is that the rules of D&D treat dead bodies as objects. Like you're either a creature or something's either a creature or an object. And once you're deceased, you become an object. And so if you were the last member, like last surviving member of your party, you could load up all your friends on a horse. Deceased friends on a horse, cast invisibility on the horse, and then you just have to get that horse out of the dungeon to bring your party back to life when you get back to town.
Is this to avoid enemies attacking the bodies and doing double damage on them, or?
Well, no, because they're dead already. They have to be dead.
Oh, dead.
Objects. Dead. Yeah, no, this is just that, like, when the raise dead spell requires the corpse to be there. Or a piece of the corpse. I can't remember off the top of my head. But regardless, the situation, and I think probably just culturally speaking, probably people want to recover the bodies, you know, of their friends.
Well, that's fair. Dungeons. But who's going after these dead bodies? Like, are we talking zombies who are going to be attacking?
I'm talking about getting them out of a dangerous situation. If you're in a dungeon, your friends have all kicked it.
Died. Dead.
Yes, died. You're trying to escape the dungeon with the bodies. So you've got to get out, but you've also got to walk this horse out. So it's,
you often
you're not
take
worried
horses
about
into dungeons?
Dane, can you yes and this, please? You're really, it's like pulling teeth with you today.
I'm really pulling a Benjamin Huffman here. I'm sorry.
You
my
are
bad.
Just, this is a no but day for Dane.
I'm just saying, like, how often you take horses into dungeons and
all the time. Next question. How else would you like to poke a hole in this conversation?
Well, Benjamin,
In summary, if you're in a dangerous situation, no matter what that situation is, and you would like to escape with your friends' bodies so that you can return them to life, you can cast this on your horse, load up your friends, and be on your merry way. This works better if your friends are all halflings or gnomes, because then they'll weigh so little that the horse will actually be able to carry them.
This is not the first time we've said that having a party
of halflings and gnomes is... Yeah, it is weird how advantageous it is to be lightweight in D&D, but I guess maybe in real life that's how it is too. That's about all I have to say about invisibility, Dane.
Yeah, I don't see any other things we can talk about.
Beautifully done.
Thanks. Good start to the season.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find me on various social media as Sterling Vermin, or the internet at large at sterlingvermin.com.
And I'm on the internet too at Dane in Danger, all the places, even Blue Sky.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you again after your next long rest.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Dispel Magic. If this has inspired any ideas for your game, or you have another take on today's topic, please let us know on Twitter, @DispelMagicPod.
You can find Benjamin at Sterling Vermin and Dane at Dane in Danger. Thank you to Slim Mittens for our cover art, produced by Benjamin Huffman, produced and edited by Dane Fox McGraw.
Yeah.
I really liked that one.
I'm glad that you did.
The old sloppy mop.
Yeah. You keep saying that phrase.
Maybe it'll be a thing eventually.
Yeah. Maybe.